Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 19th of February. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce everybody. We'll get started. Just a programming note that Governor Andrew Cuomo will be on with Alan Chartok at 10:30 this morning. So we'll have our conversation till then. We have a lot to get to in the meantime. Let me introduce everybody to you. We have the Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Robert Griffin. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Joe.
Wonderful to have you here.
Thanks.
SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor and former New York State Senator Terry Gibson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is here.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm fine.
And he's wearing his lucky shirt today, Joe.
He is, yes. Ever lucky and very snazzy, too. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is not here yet, but we assume she will walk in at any moment. If she does, you'll know it, I'm sure. In the meantime, WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, hello, hello. You know, I keep thinking that the idea that we have extended the program to 11 o'clock is good, because when the governor wants to come on, you know, we're still here for an hour and a half. And
yes,
speaking
oh,
of
there you. Oh,
yes,
look.
You just showed up.
Oh, you missed it by that much. You would have been on time. You would have. It would have counted.
I was polite to someone and opened the door for them. Should not have.
All right. Well, good. Did you hear the governor's coming out at 10:30?
Yes,
okay, excellent.
That.
All right. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We do welcome your letters. We just ask that you keep them short and avoid abbreviations. And for God's sakes, proofread them before you send. Panel at WAMC.org. Well, what trouble can we get into this morning? Let's talk about clemency and pardons and all kinds of good stuff. We learned yesterday that the president has either pardoned or commuted the sentences of, I believe it was 11 people, is that correct? Mm-hmm. Including Rob Blagojevich, the former governor of Illinois, Michael Milken, Bernie Kerik, Edward DiBartolo, and many others. Edward was the former owner of the San Francisco 49ers. Citing what he said was advice from friends and business associates, he granted clemency on Tuesday to a who's who of white-collar criminals from politics, sports, and business who are convicted of charges involving fraud, corruption, and lies, including Michael Milken. The president pardoned Mr. Milken, the so-called junk bond king of the 80s, as well as the former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik, and again, Ed DiBartolo, who is a former owner of the San Francisco 49ers. He commuted the sentence of Rod Blagojevich, a former Democratic governor of Illinois, who last night left prison. 4 years early, left prison. And I'm sorry?
I was going to say he's gray now.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
you know.
His famous black hair is now gray. Prison does that to you, I guess.
I heard somebody say that he had been, when he's a politician, he had been dyeing it so that grayish to begin with, and now, you know, that's what happens.
Gotcha. Yeah, it never looked real. But, well, anyway, he is out, and Mr. Trump has stated that his commitment to a criminal justice overhaul and addressing the excessive sentences given to minorities. So what do we make of this?
This is really disgusting. I mean, it's just one more proof that this guy wants to be king, emperor, dictator. And it's not that, as I mentioned earlier today, it's not that Bill Clinton didn't do some pardoning himself. He did. And some of it was kind of suspicious, to be honest with you. But
in the 11th hour, though, right? I mean, I'm not saying it's good, but as he was leaving.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. This was a stick in everybody's eye. I'm going to do what I want, and I'm going to make all you people nuts about this, and I don't care, and that's what people love about me. I'm a contrarian, and I'll do that.
Bob?
So it scares me, because typically when Trump pulls one of these outrageous and over-the-top actions, it's because he's trying to deflect from something else. So I always wonder what else is sort of looming out there. I get upset with the administration. I don't usually get irate. I was irate when I saw these pardons. You know, the idea that you would suspend a sentence for a corrupt politician, a corrupt public official, it sends the absolute wrong message. And in all of these cases, not one of these people paid their debt back to society. And you see a commonality in most of the pardons. They're rich and they're connected. And they've been on Fox.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They've been on Fox News. Yeah.
I think there's one other connection is that, or two other connections. One is many of the prosecutors in those earlier cases were also involved in the Mueller report. And Trump is trying to get back at that. And this was not like spur of the moment. He's had this plan. I think it's clemency with Jared Kushner. It's something he is mapping out to send a message important for his reelection, which is that all politicians are corrupt. I mean, Blagojevich is a Democrat, so he's saying
a Trumpocrat, according to last night.
How does that fit in with his expectations of what might happen to him?
Because
should he be ousted and convicted of something?
Well, I guess he'd have to have a Trump-friendly president into oust him, or he would pardon himself ahead of time. It's more to his style. But I think he's sending a clear message that, you know, all politicians are dirty. White collar crime is nothing. This is just business, and it's okay, and it's not a big deal. Even Blagojevich, what did he say? The term he had served so far was ridiculous. No, it really isn't ridiculous to sell a Senate seat,
right.
But that's the message.
And
I
by
think
the way, that was
it.
The least of it. There was a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was caught on tape. I mean, again, it isn't like it's circumstantial evidence. It was caught on tape.
Mm-hmm.
He was caught on tape saying this, and I would imagine, you know, I won't imagine. I think one of the things that worries me most is that he is so undermining the efficacy of the rule of law in this country that people will have no confidence in the legal system. They're going to have no confidence in any of our institutions. And you know what? That's when you start to get anarchy.
Well, that's really been his entire career personality, right? He's prided himself on being able to flaunt his power, to show that he is above the law, to show that he can get away with anything. He did that in his business. I mean, he was constantly trying to find ways to skirt the law. I mean, what really amazes me about this is just his blatant willingness, ability, like eagerness to embrace corruption, to flaunt it, to get in bed with it, to wallow around in it and just throw it in our faces and just basically say, I can do whatever I want, and there's nothing you can do to stop me. And
I'm
to
the
prove
chief
it,
law enforcement.
I'm going to find some of the most disgusting people and let them out of jail.
And at the bottom of this is that other character, Rudy Giuliani, who is so close to this, and we see his relationship with Kerik. You know, Kerik is just a terrible man.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible, corrupt, thuggish. You know, awful guy, and at least four Law and Orders I saw have been
based on
Kerik.
So that doesn't tell you something about his character. So, but again, I was struck by what you said, Bob, about being just irate about this. But it didn't. It's not a surprise, as Rosemary indicated. I mean, it's been in the works for a while.
Yeah, but again, Joe, it shows how far the GOP has strayed from its roots were. You know, the GOP always tried to present themselves as the party of law and order. You know, support for the police, support for the rule of law, and they have absolutely sold their soul to the devil.
You know, you said before anarchy. Yeah. That's an interesting word, in that I don't think that's what Trump is after. I think Trump is after dictatorship, which is a lot different than anarchy. Everybody gets in line.
But again, when you look at the history of how dictators come to power, the best way they do it is that they undermine the legitimate institutions of government and then appear to be a savior coming in order to take the power from the people.
You know what I think is the worst thing is that he is completely within his rights to do this. There is nothing we can do. Presidential pardon is absolute, just like his obstruction of Congress proved to be acceptable within the limits that we have. And we always thought that, oh, yes, it's all set up. There's a framework here for civil action, for a way for things to proceed. And he and his lawyers have been completely adept in getting into all the loopholes and the bugs in the system.
Would you say that a president shouldn't have the pardon power? I mean, because they all use it. I mean,
yes.
Obama,
and
Bush.
And there have been abuses by presidents of both parties. I think there should be a procedure that, yes, they should have pardon power, but there should be set regulations. And certainly to bypass the Justice Department is totally wrong. You have to have an impact statement from victims. You know, there's a due process you could set up. We don't have it set up.
Well, who would enforce that procedure? I mean, who would be the overseer of that?
Exactly. The Attorney General should have been.
So there you go. I mean, how would you stop a president like this from just going around any procedure that was put into place?
No. I mean, you're right. I think the problems with the pardon system go beyond Trump. He, of course, as with everything else, pushes it to the absolute limit. But we've had the same complaints about George W. Bush, about Trump.
And Clinton.
What Bill Clinton did was
arguably a lot worse.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's a benefit that it was in the 11th hour. I think that's in some ways a shadier thing to do.
He got out of town before he was held accountable.
Right. And those people were campaign contributors too, which made it even worse.
You bet.
Yeah, but listen to us, Chris. I mean, we're arguing which is lower in the bottom of the cesspool.
Exactly.
I mean, is it Trump or Clinton? It's like, that's not what we should be doing with our president. We should be holding it up as a shining example of what you could be and what's great about this country. And you know, if you have a loved one in jail right now and you're looking at it going, there is no justice.
Yeah.
Because I don't have money, because I don't have connections, I'm working under a different set of laws than what he is.
Well, that's the other thing, is that there are a lot of people sitting in jail right now who could be, who are much more deserving of these pardons than this particular
cast of characters. You would like a system. That's why the pardon has always been seen as a good thing, that there's this final act of mercy, which is great. We should not feel, when the president exercises the right of pardon, this outrage and irritation that we feel right now. And if there were a process like are certain crimes exempt? I don't think so. Can they be a campaign contributor? Does that make a difference? We've never sat and debated this. It's left up to individual people. We have been relying on the integrity of our presidents. And Trump has proved, if nothing else, that you cannot rely on that.
Well, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I keep coming back to the so-called law that resides within the Justice Department, or the opinion that Trump cannot be prosecuted, which is extraordinary, which is just extraordinary. Now, you see, that is not a law. But once again, we come back to who's going to enforce it if you decide. And is the Justice Department going to say, no, you just committed a crime and we're going to arrest you for that? Not this Justice Department, not this guy Barr.
The president seems to just take great joy in pretending to be, if not actually being, judge and jury in so many situations. If you listen to the way he speaks about these things, and he's been doing this since he took office, he uses the word fairness a lot in the way he describes his activities, his decisions, and even more so today with these pardons. He's just constantly talking about what's fair and what's not fair, as if he is the great decision maker.
Arbiter.
And that is a terrifying thought, that we now look to this president to determine what fairness means in our country. I'm just terrified for our children.
You know, the Blagojevich thing is, you have to remind you, I had to remind myself about that whole story. But, you know, he gets caught up in this. He's accused. He goes out. He writes a book. Mm-hmm. He went on Second City. He tried to do a deal with NBC on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, but they wouldn't let him go to Costa Rica. So his wife filled in. Mm-hmm. His wife Patty, who was the one who frequently appeared on Fox, begging for the president to commute a sentence, which he did. Then when he had the deal with NBC, they wouldn't let him go to Costa Rica. So then he did The Celebrity Apprentice, eventually being fired, but then, of course, having the relationship with the man who would then become president of the United States.
But you know, Joe, one of the things I found most interesting is his description at the prison door was that he was now a Trumpocrat.
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting, obviously, in that that's what Trump is looking for. He's looking for Democrats who will be Trumpocrats.
Yeah, but the idea that he's got to pardon corrupt public officials in order to start to build that cadre of misfits should send anybody who's thinking and supporting him a really clear message that you are not what he's looking for.
So has there been any indication that anybody in that Republican group is getting off the dime based on what you just said.
No, Susan Collins, are you listening? I mean, are you, you know, is this repentant?
There was also that moment when he was on the tarmac yesterday when he was talking about the commuting of Blagojevich's sentence, and he said that key line, which he always uses, which is, he seems like a very nice person, pause,
I don't know him.
Right.
I only worked with him for several months, but I don't know him, and the difference between commuting the sentence and pardoning him, too.
Joe, I wish we could transpose the Geico commercial with Pinocchio and his nose growing on Trump's body, so when he starts to tell these things that we can actually start to see the nose grow, just to see how big a whopper it is that he's telling.
But I think the big question, though, is how does his base respond to this? What is the message to his base? That if you're corrupt, I'll take care of you. The government's corrupt, and let's just acknowledge it and let all these people out of jail. I'm not quite sure what the message is.
I don't know.
Great
question. I was trying to figure that out,
what
too.
What is the appeal?
It's an odd, I mean, Di Bartolo, is that his name?
Yeah.
Bartolo. I mean, that one has some political juice because some of famous players like Jerry Rice have been lobbying for his release. So that one makes a little bit of sense politically. But the other ones, I really don't get it.
He wants Pete Rose to be to go into the Hall of Fame, too, another corrupt sportster who did the worst thing in sports, which is he bet on his own team. But Trump, corruption is acceptable. That's the message that comes through all of his
It's
actions.
Not just that it's acceptable, it's encouraged. It's expected.
It's expected.
You get
expected.
Awards for
That's
it. You get medals for it.
But here's the thing, okay? Just because I go stand with a bunch of people that are much heavier and larger than me, that doesn't make me skinny. So this idea that he's surrounding himself with equally corrupt and disgraced people as himself doesn't burnish his reputation. And you know, I do think what he's trying to do is he's trying to desensitize the public to the idea that public corruption is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
and that by
downplaying it, by downplaying Carrick, by downplaying what he did with the rest, you know, sends a message that public corruption is not that big a deal. You know, all politicians do it because that's one of the things you know he's going to get hit on during the election.
Yeah.
All right. Let's pause there. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. What do you make of all of this? We have Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Rosemary Armeo. Again, panel@wamc.org for your letters. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Alan has the first of our letters this morning.
I do, Joe, and thank you for the opportunity. Paul says, autocracy dictatorship, beat down the press, grab control of the Justice Department, support fringe groups that attempt to enforce your madness, and talk as if you're the only reason the country has not collapsed. Could you really feel as if the election will be honest when he refuses to support any election reform to ensure that it is? The future seems bleak, and this will keep voters away. And that's from Paul.
Yep. Paul makes a really interesting point, but I think he forgets one of the other pieces of a move to a dictatorship, and that's buying off the military.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what's been done with the military, particularly with military spending, if you look at the disparity of pay between the military versus the civilian side of the federal government, there is a pattern here with him continuing to put resources that nobody else gets into the military.
So what are you suggesting?
So what I'm suggesting is
when push comes to shove, and when this guy decides to take over the government, the military will ...
You know, I don't know. They swear an oath, and I hope that the oath means something. But you know, I looked at what happened with the Senate, and the oath obviously meant nothing to most of those senators, with the exception of the Democrats and Mitt Romney, who I think deserves a statue. But I don't know. But what happens with the military, Alan? But it really does scare me.
Wow.
Just to be clear, and I think I hear in your voice the idea that they're going to be complicit in his takeover? Or they might be?
I think if you look at the historical rise of despots and dictators, they are always in bed with the military. That the military either actively or passively supports what they do. And heck, that goes all the way back to, you think about Rome. You can start from Rome and move onward from there if you want. Certainly how we saw the rise of the fascist party in Germany.
I remember the days when we got letters from listeners saying, oh, you're going crazy making comparisons between Trump and the Reich. Remember?
Yeah, sure?
Yeah, remember those days?
I have to say I still think that's a little on the far-fetched side, but okay. I'm just a wild-eyed optimist.
I'm sorry. If I could, though, Chris, understand the comparison is how they came to power, not comparing Trump and the GOP to the atrocities that the Nazis committed. But when you look at the pattern or the process that was used by Hitler and the party in order to start to consolidate, undermine the democratic process and consolidate power, it is very, very similar to what you're seeing with Trump.
Including looking at the Nuremberg crowds who were wildly cheering him and these events that he keeps putting on for himself. Mm-hmm.
The rallies, you mean?
Yes.
I just think you have to, at least if you're going to compare the Hitler Nazi army to the current 21st century United States Army, just the makeup of the armies themselves, of the military themselves, I think is worth noting. I mean, the United States military is more diverse than it's ever been in every possible way. Predominantly, I think much of the military is made up of people of color, certainly in the infantry divisions. And I think it's just, I think
one
you
of the reasons I
that.
Think the idea of the military turning against the citizenry is kind of far-fetched.
I think there may be limits as to how far they would be willing to go to follow this president.
And we heard from Caroline, who said, questions on pardons. Dear panel, it appears that several people granted pardons have already served their sentences. What does the pardon do for them? And thanks, Caroline. Now, Caroline, I have to tell you, I have known people in that situation, and once you've been convicted of a crime, and you're looking for, a pardon, it's because you don't want to be hanging around, walking around with that around your shoulders for the rest of your life, and money and resources go to that.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a permanent scarlet C that's on your chest for, the felony conviction stays with you and also has implications for some other rights if you start to think about gun ownership and other things. So it does, but I think in a lot of these cases it's a vanity issue. And I don't know, did everybody serve their terms completely?
The only computation was Blagojevich, who was still serving.
Okay.
Milliken's long out, right?
No, that's a good point.
Well, I think he was already out.
Yeah, he was out. He was trying to.
That's true. There were stories when he came out.
The philanthropy and all
that. The pardon just erases the felony from your record.
Correct.
The clemency does not erase the felony from your record.
No.
So Blagojevich will still have that label of felon on his record.
You just do 9 years as opposed to 14.
And we've seen it here on the local level, on the statewide level, the governor has granted controversial clemencies.
Right.
Yeah.
Some of them justified.
Yeah. Okay, and then Caroline says we did that, and then we're going to Tracy, who says Trump. Good morning, panel. Yesterday, Trump declared himself in capital letters chief law enforcement officer in the country. Was this a message to Barr? Tracy.
I think it was a message to everybody that he views himself as the sole arbiter in these situations. I was surprised because typically that's a title that's reserved for the Attorney General.
Sure.
At least growing up, that's always the way. And I was told that the chief law enforcement of the country is the Attorney General.
How quaint!
And now he's taken that.
I think that the Attorney General is completely supportive of allowing Donald Trump to take this title. I think what Bill Barr wants to do is work behind the scenes and support this president, and I think they are working together on this very closely. I think it's all orchestrated.
I think that the president always has been the chief law enforcement officer. We just had presidents before this who saw the value of an independent judicial process, a law enforcement process. He does not, because really he could fire Barr. If he doesn't like what Barr is doing, he could fire him. So he does. He is the boss over Barr, and that's been true for every president.
Mm-hmm. We heard from Jules, our friend Jules, who writes us frequently, the great corruption fighter. Dear panel, do you not see the supreme hypocrisy here when Trump goes after Biden for, quote, corruption, and out of the other side of his mouth pardons Blagojevich?
Yeah, the hypocrisy is stunning. my question, though, is why don't the Trump supporters see this?
They don't.
Yes, that's
a
great question, and I've had an answer all along, which nobody seems to be listening to. This is really the fight to keep white America on top of things. That's what they want. When you say to the Republican Party, how much of this stuff can you put up with? They say back, yeah, but these others are coming, and we got to put a stop to that.
I think there is a lot to be said for that. I mean, we know that the majority of the incarcerated prison system is made up of young black men that have been there. I mean, that the majority of people in prison are young black men. Mm-hmm. We know that by far. So why are the majority of people being pardoned?
Old
white men. In fairness, he has pardoned a number of young black men, too, as he highlighted during the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And then we heard from Jay in Williamstown. Good morning, panel. Of course he's pardoning people now. He's running out of free men and women willing to serve in his cabinet.
Blagojevich, Secretary of State.
You know, there are lots of jokes around this guy. But in the end, none of this is really all that funny. It's just awful. And Cindy says, loopholes. Hello, panel. Trump and his cronies have always looked for loopholes. Mm-hmm. I guess it should be no surprise that he's doing it in the presidency. A lot of our leadership roles depend on ethics. If one is unethical, then there are loopholes. And that's Cindy in East Hampton. And that's all I got for now, Joe.
All right. We're going to take a break in just a second. Before, let's talk about the story that is somewhat related to this, which is, so what does this mean for Roger Stone? Roger Stone will be sentenced Thursday, despite his ongoing bid to overturn conviction. It has long been asked, the president was asked yesterday, if as these pardons and clemencies were announced, oh, by the way, what does this mean for Roger Stone?
I wonder what the Las Vegas odds on this are.
I was surprised Roger Stone wasn't on that list yesterday, actually. I mean, mm-hmm. it would have been fairly easy to do just to mix him in with a list of other people. And I mean, Roger Stone's going to be pardoned eventually. It's just a matter of before the election or after the election. It may very well be after.
Okay, my prediction is that we will have another dramatic round of clemency blitz here, and you'll see Flynn, Manafort, and Stone all pardoned.
Before or after the election?
Before.
And this kind of goes to Bob's conspiracy theory that, you know, by releasing these individuals who have committed some extremely serious crimes, mm-hmm. Have breached pretty much all ethical protocol, by now going to people like Roger Stone, it doesn't look like such a big deal anymore. It kind of makes what Roger Stone did look kind of petty, really. And it maybe sets him up for being able to release these other offenders.
And will the Republican base give a damn? That's the question.
I don't know. There's no reason to think they would.
The base put him in office to do exactly what he's doing, to shake up the system, to make all of us liberals, you know, pull at our pearls, which we're doing. He is doing exactly what they wanted. His approval rating has gone up, not down. It's very distressing. And the problem is Trump, but it's also the people who support him and will support others like him after Trump.
I don't get the reference to pulling at our pearls. Can you help me with that?
It's for women. You pull at your pearls and worry.
I bet you clutched them.
But I don't have any pearls.
Yeah, clutch your
pearls.
Them,
they'll come right off and be all over the floor.
Well, that happens too. But I'm the only one who knows about pearls here.
but you know, back to the question, I do think what he's doing is that he's setting himself up as fixing the faults that are in the justice system.
Yes.
So that this becomes part of his narrative of why he needs to be reelected, because he's the only one that will fix this. Dear listeners, particularly if any of you support Trump, remember this background, okay? I mean, he ran a casino into the ground. He ran an airline into the ground. He ran a university into the ground. He ran a state company into the ground. And he's running this country into the ground.
Oh, wow.
That's a very generous definition of the word university.
I'm using Betsy DeVos's definition of university.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to talk about. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll return right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. We have letters. We'll go to those now.
Okay, Joe. Thank you very much. To all, it's obvious on the Rod Blagojevich pardon, it's associated with Obama and everything Trump has done to undermine the Obama legacy. Jackie from Bern, New York. Okay.
Yeah, I wondered about that, too, the fact that he was accused of pay-for-play for Obama's Senate seat, if that had a special appeal to Trump.
What is it that makes – I know this is sort of an obvious – question designed to get the right answer, but but what makes him so crazy about Obama?
Racism.
Yeah,
you think that's what it is?
Well,
it's also part of it. It's just that Obama, has such a loyal following. You know, he's on a pedestal.
Yeah, he's loved.
Worshipped.
He's really loved in the way that Trump never has been.
And
exactly.
Also, Obama took shots at him at the White House Correspondence Dinner 2 years ago.
Which may have resulted in this whole thing.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
Seth Meyers takes credit for that. Yeah.
If there are moments in time you could go back and erase, that might be one of them.
Yeah.
But it's been longstanding, though, even before. I mean, the whole Trumper movement and Trump suffers from little man syndrome. I think this is one of the most insecure, narcissistic people that we've ever put into the highest office of this country. And he knows that he can't achieve what Obama achieved. So rather than trying to achieve it, he just rips him down. Well, he doesn't raise himself up to a high level. He just pulls everybody down into the crap that he's in.
And as the old folk song goes, the pig got up and slowly walked away.
Yeah.
Someday I'll sing it all for you.
Cool. Well, I mean,
after the break,
I'd wear a different shirt when that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
His daily routine is the only way that he can get any joy out of life in any minute of his life is to degrade other people, whether that's President Obama or whether that's anyone else who happens to be walking across the street. That's what he does.
Anyway, Tom writes, Trump's pardons, God help us. Hi, folks. How much of Trump's pardoning all those people can be seen as Trump creating a chaotic situation? This is to your thesis, Bob. And then convincing his followers that he'll solve it later if there are consequences resulting from it. Thanks from Tom from Poughkeepsie, New York.
Interesting point, Tom, and it certainly has a feel of a reality TV show. And I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see, the monthly pardon games. If you beg Donald Trump for a pardon, maybe you'll get one, and he'll watch everybody get on their knees and beg him, and he likes that.
And June writes pardons for sell, pardons for sell. Panel, it says sell,
okay.
S-E-L-L. This may be in violation of your admonition.
Okay. All right.
Check the work. As Dr. Padilla would say, you've got to check the work. Panel, you missed the point that Trump said yesterday that Jared and others would soon be visiting the liberated rich men, presumably for donations. See video clips from CNN last night, and that's from Jane.
Yeah, Jane, good point. But every mob boss always sends their butt man after they do somebody a favor, so why would we expect different?
Did you say butt man?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks. Ruth said, look here.
I'm salty today. Sorry. This really bugs me.
Ruth said.
It's a Boston accent day.
Ruth said, look here. It there. That's what it says. Look here, dot it there. I agree with all the reasons you guys give for those awful pardons, but why now? I think Trump needs to be the center of attention, has a lot to do with it. The Democratic race, especially Bloomberg's entrance, was getting front page coverage. Trump gives these pardons and voila, everyone is talking about him again. Trump has held a rally in every state on primary day to keep attention to himself. Today's debate will include Bloomberg for the first time. He had to do something big, capital big. Thanks for being there, and that's from Ruth. And then we heard from Gregory in Rhinebeck. Dear panel, Rosemary says the president should have pardon power. Why? It's a vestige of monarchy, in other words, dictatorship, from which the founding fathers could not decisively divorce the country. Now we are experiencing the consequences of their indecisiveness. Why must that be? The Constitution should be subject to ready change, not viewed as some sort of political Bible. That's Gregory in Rhinebeck.
No, I think governors and presidents should have the right of pardon, because there has to be one last appeal. And done right, it's a quality of mercy that you don't get in any other way. And I look at Obama's release of Chelsea Manning, who got 35 years for leaking documents to WikiLeaks. That's an extraordinary sentence, more than Blagojevich. Chelsea Manning gave documents to Julian Assange.
I remember that. But what was the relief in this case?
Obama pardoned her. And this was someone who was suffering grievously. It was Bradley Manning when he went into prison, and then she had a transgender. So in addition to a sentence that was brought on by an espionage law that dates back to the World Wars, not to current events, there was an extra measure of suffering. And so without saying that what she did was right, the president let her go, let her get out of jail. That is what a pardon to me means, where you just have this act of clemency and mercy. I think right now we're seeing it with Maddox, the financier who cheated so many people, Bernie Maddox.
Madoff.
Well, it depends on whether you live in France.
Yeah. Maddox is what you need after talking about Trump.
Right. Yeah. But he right now is apparently has a terminal kidney disease, will live a year maybe. A year and a half. Should he be pardoned? That's an act of mercy, not of justice.
Yeah, but see, I don't know. I just have a problem with this, because it's always rich and famous people who are the ones who get these pardons. I mean, not in every case, but if you don't get pardoned, if you're poor, you need some sort of publicity campaign, too. It's like there are plenty of people.
Kim Kardashian.
Right. There are plenty of people who are sitting in jail who are worthy of mercy who never get it. This is another way that the system benefits the powerful.
But see, that is what I argued earlier, that we need an actual set of rules and procedures, due process, so that everyone has access, just like bail.
I mean, even Chelsea Manning, it was a famous case. That's why she got the pardon.
Exactly, and it should not be that way. Just like bail, it should be anybody should have access to this. So that's fixing the system, not eliminating it, as this listener is suggesting.
I want to go back to Madoff for a second.
Sure.
Think of all those people.
I know. He just ruined lives.
Everything.
That have never gotten justice.
Ruined lives, ruined their family, ruined so many families.
But none of their lives are improved by keeping a dying man in prison.
There are lots of dying men in prison, though.
But there shouldn't be, Chris. Well, okay, why are we paying for them? We could talk about geriatric prison
care. A lot of people have lost their lives because of what he did. A lot of people were not able to pay their medical bills. A lot of people have taken their lives because of what he did. I mean, he has ruined hundreds of families.
Including one of his own children.
I think he should be punished, and I think if his fate is to die in prison, so be it. I mean, what he did was beyond horrible. Yeah. It was just inexcusable.
And I disagree with you on Chelsea Manning. I thought that the 35 years was just for what was done to this country. However, I still philosophically support the idea of pardon, because I think it's part of the checks and balances among and between the three branches of government. And if you look at it that way, it really makes sense, because we've turned it into this ridiculous WWE spectacle. It doesn't mean that it should always be that way.
Well, Bob, remind everybody what she did.
She took classified documents and turned them over to Assange and gave away both tradecraft and tools, and that led to wholesale arrests of people that were supporting the United States and other countries. I'll call them spies. I mean, I guess that's what they were. But
Julian Assange that I blame for what Chelsea Manning did was whistleblow. She took documents that were not highest classified. They probably should not have been classified at all. And the debate has raged because of what she did. It was Julian Assange who then distributed it without checking and vetting.
Again, this is, we're back to the, is Trump worse than Clinton? I mean, the two of them are wrong. And he still has not been brought to justice, Assange. But I do think the damage that was done by those releases and what Snowden did, you know, it basically cost people their lives. That's why I thought it was actually a just that justice was meted out. And I didn't agree with Obama when he did that.
And Dan says the only ideology that matters, the only ideology that matters is for this election is pragmatism with a capital P. Ability to trounce Trump is the only measure that matters. Ideologues need to set aside their purity tests for more stable times. All of their resources need to be devoted to the single candidate with the best chance of dethroning the self-anointed criminal coddling king. Cheers, Dan from Belchertown. Where may I add, everybody has a restaurant.
You know, the Republicans don't have a purity test, do they? I mean, there is no such thing anymore as a purity test for them. I mean, if the purity test is...
Only in your bedroom.
Well, there's no purity test for any politician.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think Donald Trump has ruined the entire idea of a purity test. Democrats may be having a purity test, but I'm not sure it really matters.
They do have a
purity test.
Democrats
are having a primary. They're having a good, lively, contested primary. We'll see who wins, right?
They do have a purity test. Are you for Trump?
Yes,
or
you
not.
Support Trump.
That's the purity test. Yeah.
And by saying that no politician has ethics, that's like saying no journalists have ethics, which I hear all the time because I teach it, and it's not true. And it feeds into Trump's idea that all politicians do bad. What I'm doing is no worse than anybody else.
Well, I mean, when you get to the presidential level, I think they all have to make certain moral compromises and have certain personality flaws that a lot of us would be uncomfortable with, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just something about the grandiosity of wanting to be president that I think is maybe a character flaw in itself.
Brenda says, very quickly, law and order, what role does the Supreme Court have, if any? Brenda from Kingston, yes, it has a great role. And sooner or later, a lot of these cases wend their way up to the Supreme Court, and you can almost predict what's going to happen.
We're going to take a break. We'll hold there, and we will be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Just a reminder, the Governor Andrew Cuomo, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, will be on with Alan starting at 10:30 this morning. So we have about 24 minutes or so. And we go to your letters.
And here are two. Suzanne says, pardons, we should not discount the perspective of various biographers, one or two, who have said that he is basically a child. I assume we're talking about Trump here. His need to get important people like him is a big reason, I suggest, that he is enjoying giving breaks and pardons and utters so much public platitudes. He is, in a way, desperate to be admired and liked. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is sick and dysfunctional, but it seems pretty clear that he is not a man who is philosophical. Well, it depends on how you define philosophical, doesn't it? I mean, philosophical.
Yeah, I mean, just because I don't think he's a particularly deep ethical thinker, I wouldn't turn my back on him. I mean, I think he's as sneaky as they come.
Well, he doesn't claim to be a deep ethical thinker. In fact, you know, quite often talks
about
how
he's a stable genius
sort of,
now, so be careful.
Yeah, but there's a difference in being a stable genius and a deep ethical thinker, right?
I mean, what do you think, Chris?
I was just wondering, if we were sitting here 5 years ago talking about the Chelsea Manning pardon, would you be as upset on that show as you are?
Yeah, I absolutely would. I thought that was absolutely wrong.
Then doesn't that mean that this argument that what Trump did is something abnormal kind of— not actually the case. I mean, haven't other presidents done pardons that are just as objectionable?
Yeah, but not with the background that this guy has.
Yeah, and embracing particularly what really sort of frosted my cookies, I think, was the Carrick and the
whoa now, sir. Children could be listening.
Well, that's why I said it. That's what it's fine. I mean, what really got me though is the idea of embracing embracing the public corruption as if it's okay, and that somehow they become the aggrieved party in this. They weren't. These were corrupt public officials, and to me, that is absolutely one of the sins the country cannot ignore. Mm-hmm. That if our public officials feel like they are not accountable to the law at any level, whether it's local, state, or federal government, pack it in, because then the law doesn't matter. And that's where we're heading, is the law doesn't matter.
And Pamela says, clemency for minorities. Dearest panel, the only minority that Trump has consistently demonstrated concern for is the 1%. Affectionately, Pamela from Troy.
Good point.
All right. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. So there will be a debate tonight. It takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada, and the caucus, the Nevada caucus, is on Saturday. Bloomberg, of course, Michael Bloomberg will not be on the ballot in Nevada, but he will be on the debate stage. So, what does that mean? And there is a news analysis in the New York Times this morning about how Michael Bloomberg has to debate without Annette, and. The governor, the mayor, the former mayor, will be on his own and not be. You know, there is one thing about having so many debates prior is that they do season you a bit.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And so, assuming he's been
coached
to the nth degree, what do we expect tonight?
I think that he has been using this tour of the country doing his campaign to practice how to respond to these issues. So I'm not supporting him and I'm not defending him, but I'm actually expecting that he'll do quite well. I think that he has had a lot of practice.
Are you not supporting him? Is that right?
I'm not supporting him, but I do think that
Who
he has had
supporting?
A lot of practice. I'm not supporting anyone at the moment, but
you're
I'm not supporting
especially
Bloomberg.
Not supporting Bloomberg.
and I just think that he will have had a lot of practice on the campaign trail, and I think that he's going to come into this with some good talking points.
Well, there's another
way
to look at it, and that is you cannot turn the television on without seeing a superb ad. By a black person or an Obama ad, you know, which has been done, or by women who are saying that he's going to, black women who are saying he's committed to saving us, basically. And then you're going to have a debate. Which do you think is going to be preeminent in the minds of the people? A debate which we know has been falling off, or these ads?
Yeah, I think the ads will be, but if he looks really shaky tonight, I think that will. That's certainly right. Blunt his momentum.
I mean, one of the things that we said is that the downside is the debate doesn't allow you to edit. You know, I mean,
That's funny. You can make it do what you want to.
A slick marketing campaign, you can get people to buy anything, but when they taste it, do they really want it? You know?
I like
and
somebody with a sense of humor.
Today's our first taste, and he's in a tough spot because, like you said, all these other candidates have a lot of practice at this now. And they're going to be going after him. And he has said a lot of really outrageous and offensive things and had a lot of outrageous and offensive policies. And if he just spends the whole night apologizing, I'm not sure that that's going to look like the guy that you want going up against Trump.
This is a guy who has years of experience in New York City, which is a hotbed of partisan, passionate politics. He knows what he's doing. And you're right. There's tons at stake for him tonight. If he blows it, I don't think he'll get another chance, no matter what his commercials
are. He's not going to blow it. He's going to acknowledge that he did these things.
Yep.
He's going to admit that he did them. He's going to apologize. And he's going to pivot and talk about why he's the best candidate to be president.
And all his programs.
How do you exactly apologize for saying that redlining, suggesting that redlining was a good thing, or that throwing black kids up against a wall is a good thing?
I mean,
for Michael Bloomberg, you can't apologize
For Michael Bloomberg, he's going to say, I'm sorry, it was wrong. Now let me tell you why I should be president of the United States. That's the way he's going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for me personally, I think it's very hard to believe that it's a 78-year-old man has suddenly pivoted on everything he's believed for his entire life. I think it looks pretty inauthentic.
Well, there's nothing wrong with pivoting, too. I mean, that's unlike Bernie, who has been absolutely rigidly consistent. Some people find fault with that, Chris. This is a politician who is saying, you know, at the time I was fighting crime, I thought it was right. It did have an effect. And so that blinded me to the data I should have seen then, that it had a terrible impact on minority community. I see that now. I deeply apologize. It won't happen
again.
And
I didn't change my mind about it until I was running for president.
Well, he's not going to say that because that's obvious.
That is the question he'll be subject to.
And what about
Chris
the 62
right about
women
that.
Who have claimed sexual harassment? harassment, or I mean, how do you? There's just a lot of stuff.
You're right.
He's carrying a lot of baggage into this.
You're
debate.
Right, Chris. I mean, I agree. It is not defensible, but yet he's going to say, "I'm sorry." He's not the mistake that he can make tonight. What could really mess him up is if he starts trying to defend these things.
Or if he looks arrogant.
If he gets caught in a back and forth about why I can justify doing this. Then he's in trouble.
And as for women, I mean, that's a charge against him that has a particular import to me. He was a powerful businessman at a time when the rules were different. And Robert Packwood is another person, the senator from Oregon, who got caught when the rules in the Senate changed. And he needs to acknowledge that. He goes, I would not behave the same way now. And I apologize for what I did. And women are going to forgive him for it. What, he's already won over, if you look at the polls, support from women and minorities that I had not expected to see.
I think those polls are based on ads. I think when people learn some of the stuff that's in his background.
I don't disagree.
I mean, allegedly, he said he wouldn't need female employees if there was a machine that could perform oral sex. I think when women hear that, I don't think they're going to be
You think that's worse than...
No, I don't.
If you're famous, grab my private parts.
And what about allegedly?
What you're looking for is a contrast with Trump, not somebody who has similar problems.
And what about allegedly? You say allegedly.
Well, those are
somebody starts saying allegedly,
he settled a lot of cases, didn't he?
You're talking about 62 women. 62. I mean, if it were talking four or five, okay, maybe you'd say, well. Maybe there's nothing to the claims. When you're talking about that many people, it's hard to discount that.
That it's actually is the first time that. I heard that number. That's
62 women and 40-something lawsuits.
And Acacia says, I wish the president would get his pardon list from the Innocence Project. Right. Thank you all for being there.
Good point.
That's an excellent point.
You know, I'm fascinated by the Bernie philosophy, the Bernie prominence here. He just keeps going up and up and up in terms of public support for him. This last poll said something like 20% of Democrats in America. That's huge.
32, according to the ABC poll.
32%.
Yeah.
You mean altogether? Yeah.
32% of Democrats at the moment in a national poll. I mean, national polls are national polls. They're name recognition
not really.
Polls to
it's
a degree.
Important. But, yeah. There is a cadre of people in this country who are saying, well, listen, we're not going to listen to people like you. We're going to do what we think is right here. And, we got Trump on one hand and we need an anti-Trump and we're going to vote for him. Whether or not they know more than we do in terms of who could win, that's interesting. Now, I see that Bernie is being sensitive to some issues, like releasing his medical records. He says he's going to do that.
No, he says he won't do it.
He won't do it.
He won't do it.
I guess I read the screen wrong, Joe. I'm so sorry.
No, he won't do it.
Does he have, we don't know why. We're just getting it off the screen.
Yeah, we'll find out.
78-year-old
well,
man.
Why does that surprise you?
Who just had a heart attack?
Wait,
what does that surprise you, Alan, that he's doing?
Thing.
Alan, why does it surprise you that he's doing so well? I mean, what?
No, I think there's. Look, we saw what happened with impeachment, right? There was a group of people in America who said, this guy, we are so angry at his terrible presentation, everything he is, Trump, that we insist on his being impeached. So Nancy Pelosi tried to hold them off, obviously. Then she couldn't stop the tide at all. In comes the impeachment. He's impeached now. Has that impeachment really hurt him? Or now that he has survived, and we always knew he was going to do this, is he now saying, okay, now I'll get even with all of you for this?
Mm-hmm. That's what he's doing.
Right. That it's absolutely what he's doing. And it's interesting, Alan, is that impeachment actually seems to have given him more momentum than chastising him the way I think Lamar Alexander and Susan Collins thought. And right now, you've got to admit that Sanders has a lot of momentum, and momentum means a lot during these campaigns.
It sounds to me more and more like he's going to be the candidate.
He's being helped by Bloomberg because Bloomberg is dividing the quote-unquote moderate lane.
Exactly.
You know, if Bloomberg wasn't spending all this money, it's possible a Mayor Pete or a Klobuchar could be emerging as kind of the Bernie alternative, but that vote is being divided.
Especially
but
they each have about
10-15%. Chris, you don't listen.
I'm listening.
I keep telling you, all that was decided before Bloomberg actually came in.
I don't think that's true. I mean, Bloomberg,
yeah, it was.
New Hampshire was not decided before Bloomberg came in. Mayor Pete did very well in Iowa and New Hampshire.
He did.
Traditionally, a person who does as well as he did in those two states would be riding this wave of momentum and would be going into Super Tuesday with kind of the wind at their back. But Bloomberg has sucked all of that wind away because he's spending so much. And nobody else, I mean, that's all they're talking about on MSNBC. They're not talking about Mayor Peter Klobuchar every night. They're talking about Bloomberg.
One of the things that strikes me if you compare Trump and Bernie is about how they, I mentioned this before, how they both talk about fairness. Bernie's message has been very consistent and very strong, and I think one of the reasons he's doing so well is because people understand that he is fighting for the average American who feels like they've been treated misfairly, that it's time that everybody pay their fair share and the wealthy are getting away with murder. That's his idea of fairness. Right. Trump is talking about fairness in terms of a completely different definition.
Bernie's campaign ad, the prominent one that we don't see in this area, is fight for someone you don't know and who doesn't look like you. It's the exact opposite of the Trump message. Okay. And that's the argument for him being a strong candidate in the fall, and that he is just the opposite of Trump in so many
ways. Okay, truth time. Christopher, do you think it is possible that Bernie can win this election?
Very possible. I would argue that he probably, of all the candidates, might have the best chance because he would really, really mobilize the traditional Democratic base. I mean, we don't know. It's impossible to know, and these predictions almost always end up, you know, looking foolish. But at this moment in time, I think he would probably have the best chance.
And the elements of the base that he needs to really gin up are traditionally the areas of the base that don't vote. I mean, you're starting to think about college age students and sort of those demographics. It's going to be really interesting.
Black voters. He's easily the most popular candidate with Latino voters.
Who is
Bernie? He's well over 50% with Latino voters, and also he would steal some of the Trump's white working class base too. So. Go ahead.
I still don't understand that. I don't understand how you can either be for Trump or for Bernie because it strikes me as, okay, I mean, I just can't get my
because head they're both outside that. The lines.
Those are Frosted cookies.
I mean, no, actually, that's
a lot of frosting on those cookies.
What about that quarter?
That's me something really bad to frost my cookies.
Okay, right. What about that quarter?
Yeah, you'll use that in the future, Joe.
Yeah.
So, dear listeners, when you hear Joe talk about frosting cookies,
these cookies are too sweet.
So what happens when you finally drop out of a political race and you're no longer a candidate for president? Well, CNN hires you. It was just announced a few moments ago that Andrew Yang has joined the CNN political team. He'll be a political commentator. Hmm. So
that's a smart pickup for them.
I thought he was going to run for mayor of New York City. I thought that's what was going to
Yang
happen.
Yang gang.
Well, this will help, right?
It would be so good if CNN hired journalists. There's a lot of good ones out of work.
What is
and
a
they
journalist?
Go for,
can you define a journalist?
No, in fact, that's a whole existential problem right now.
We wonder why people run for president when they have no chance of winning. Well, it always does turn out to be a pretty good career move.
Yeah.
Sure. How long before Blagojevich is on the Fox team?
Oh, gosh.
In a couple of weeks at the most, I imagine.
Oh. All right.
Philip says, Trump. Hey, panel, good morning. 3 years ago, after Trump was elected, I sent a letter saying Trump was corrupt and would sell out anyone and everyone for the benefit of himself. At the time, the very smart and eloquent Joe Donahue said my letter was harsh. I'm curious, does he still think I was harsh? He worse than you thought?
Does that frost your cookies, Joe?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I misunderstood the letter.
Who remembers anything?
I would say yes. I think Trump is far worse than we thought he was going to be, and we thought he would be terrible.
I think what we hoped was that he was going to grow into the majesty of the position, which many presidents do. He went the other way.
Yeah, he's gotten more and more venal.
I think even Obama thought that. Peter says, panel, I do agree with Alan that Trump seems to be moving the country in the direction of totalitarianism. The cunning manner by which he and the Republican Party are destroying our faith in the rule of law, radically transforming the nature of our courts, eroding our norms of civility and compassion, and isolating us from dissenting voices by his Twitter bullying is alarming. He is a real-time example of how democracy dies. Jack says, Madoff. I have two friends who invested with Madoff and lost it all, but neither of them were, quote, ruined. That investment was only part of their retirement. Anyone who was ruined by not was taking an unhealthy risk, oh, brother. This is Alan Singer, brother. And should have known better to put so much of their eggs in one basket. They are not total victims. And Jack from Olivet.
I kind of take issue with that. You know, Bernie Madoff was an excellent con man. And, you know, he sold people on the idea that this was the best way to take your money and use it in a safe investment format that would guarantee you a return. Now, I mean, you can't completely blame people that trusted him. I think they are victims. I mean, he scammed them. He completely scammed them.
He lied to them.
And I feel for them. And I also know some people that had invested money with them, and they were ruined. And they were good people that were misled. And it could happen to anybody.
The Mets have never recovered. Don't you remember? The Mets ownership was invested with Madoff. Yeah.
Oh.
Strange looks.
He took money from nonprofits, from elderly people. He was horrible.
He damaged the credibility of the entire investment system.
But he's a dying man now. And in our society, we don't treat the dying the way we do. He's paid a heavy price. We extracted it.
I don't think he's paid enough of a price. I mean, I just don't think so. I mean, there are things that you do.
If you wanted to pass a law that said all dying people should be released from prison, I think I could probably get behind
that. I actually do think that's reasonable.
But if you're going to say only Bernie Madoff, I mean, if he's going to go walk out and all the others are going to stay behind, I just can't get on.
Typically,
board
what happens is you have a celebrity case that draws attention to the issue, and I'm hoping that will do for medics. We society will be paying a heavy price to wreak vengeance on him. We will pay for hospice care, for medical treatment for kidney disease. This is dialysis and transport to him. It's not like it's passive. Just keep him in his cell.
By the way,
we are paying a lot of money.
We do that for all prisoners.
Absolutely,
but
we do that for
not.
All. Well, that's a whole different debate. I mean, if we're going to talk about the entire prison system, that's a whole different discussion. But
given
Bernie Madoff himself, I just see him in a class all his own.
Given the problems with our healthcare system, it may be less humane to release all these people.
Frank says business practices. Good morning, panel. Trump's business track record is why running the country like a business cannot and will not work. And Trump supporters don't seem to understand that none of his, quote, policies will benefit them at all. Thanks, Frank from Middletown. And
you know, Alan, that's a really important a really important point. And I think one of the things that we tend to sleep on is the looming deficit. And I know deficits are only for Democratic presidents, but I worry. I really do worry about the financial implications of where this spending spree is going to end up. I mean, our deficit has absolutely ballooned under this administration.
He doesn't care.
There's no one to rein him in. There's no one to call him back. There's no way to stop it. When you say he hasn't grown into his job, I would say actually he has grown into his job. He has really embraced the power of the presidency and has found a way to pull every possible lever he can in his favor without anyone stopping him.
Agreed.
But understand what I'm saying, though, Terry, is that my argument is that he never grew into the majesty and importance of the position. Is that he continues to treat it like a C-rated either sitcom or reality TV show, not ever accepting the mantle of leader of the free world, something that other people around the globe could look to as a beacon of hope and promise. That's not him.
Well, you know, Tracy has written
an oligarch from Ukraine. Sorry,
Tracy has written us a letter, which is something I think every day. But what do we do? And that is, hi, panel. Every day we become more aware of the dismantling of our rule of law. There's only one branch, the executive. I don't believe for one second the election will be clean and fair, and 45 will win no matter what. So what can we do? I fear the real answer is absolutely nothing. Terrifying days. You know, everybody writes us letters. It's true. He's done this. He's done this. He's done this. And we all sit there and we nod our heads and say yes. But the thing that keeps occurring to me is, yes, we're reaffirming ourselves, but what do we do now? What do we do? That is really such a good letter.
It is. And you know, I think the first thing that everybody needs to do is to make sure that you and your friends and your family have registered to vote. That one of the most important things that we can do in every election, you need to go out and you need to vote. That's the most important piece of this. One of the other elements is that I think there needs to be mobilization, and I think there needs to be. I'm actually shocked that we haven't seen more people in the streets to show our dislike, and I really do think there needs to be a call to arms to protect this country.
Yeah, and not in this country. We just don't do it that way. It's too bad, because if ever it needs to be done, it's now.
Yeah.
We have the final letter.
We do. When I looked at how the news was portrayed by the, quote, other side, a lot of these so-called crimes like insider trading aren't even crimes at all, Fox News anchor. What is there to say to that? Stuff like this makes me not want to spend my future in this country. And that's from Jesse.
All right. We're going to hold it there. And next up, it'll be Alan and the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo. We will continue with that. My thanks to Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin, Chris Churchill, and Rosemary Armeo. Thank you very much. We'll be back after this very short break.